This is one of my general issues for thinking this through. Some of the inclusion-exclusion criteria have to do with scope of the measure, some have to do with data quality, and some have to do with a version of stratification. And ultimately, you know, we've got several different steps here that involve trying to create measures that are comparable enough that in scope that units of some level can be compared. And the risk adjustment, stratification adjustment, and any truncations are all potentially part of a strategy for creating apples-to-apples comparisons.
Right.
So to see them scattered through three or four different categories makes it a little hard to think about what's going on there. But I'm not quite sure how to solve that problem because truncation and exclusion has, as I said, at least two other purposes. Scope, and it defines how to deal with what looks like bad data. And those are appropriately part of the data protocol as opposed to the comparison protocol.
Yeah, I think that's something we struggled with and are very open to any thoughts on how to also pull them together. We could potentially have a call-out box that lists various approaches that of, you know, very points in which exclusions are made for all the purpose for making the measures more comparable and valid, as you said, but really are at different points in the measure subsystems. That's one thought.
Well, it may also involve just expanding submodule 4, the risk adjustment method, broadening the concept there, and including risk adjustment as one of several strategies for improving, structuring the data to allow comparability.
Do we want to talk about what type of data is important under this step? For example, inpatient claims.
That's in A, but maybe not a well-stated.
I assume that the measure developers will tell us what they need, and that might include inpatient. It might not include inpatient. So I assume it's just sort of included.
So there is this question that's already developed, number 24 in the measure specification, that seems to cover that. And I can't imagine that people are going to do much of these, you know, actually asking patients questions, but that it's going to be, you know, electronic data, claims data, largely.
Right.
So I don't know that we need to, I think that this is pretty well developed in that existing call for measures.
Okay.
What kind of data?
All right, so I think we have some good feedback for data protocol. Moving on to number 2, which is the measure or episode clinical logic. And so this gets at you the decisions using any clinical information that are made to either compose an episode or a patient population or procedure. So it can be a diagnosis or a clinical event or what have you.
So I think we need something introductory here saying, you know, what is it that you're trying to do? Are you, you know, what is the unit of analysis, right?
Yeah.
Is it,
I think the other thing that in looking at having taken apart a lot of these groupers, one of the factors that led to really egregious profiling and things was the inadequacies of the ICD-9 and ICD-10 system to identify different patient populations. Some diseases don't have any granularity at all, and I don't know if you would add an H in there or under hierarchy or codes, but that has turned out to be a huge problem. There has to be an attestation that the identifiers, the ICD-9 identifiers, do identify granularity. And that is a huge problem when you look at the adverse reports that can occur from ETGs or MIGs.
Okay. And that's something we can expand language to say, you know, it must have the relevant granularity, and that would be something in the for scientific acceptability, the steering group could explicitly request that testing shows that the diagnoses are adequate, that they've used to the measures are adequately capturing or validly capturing the population.
Well, I think it's more of a kind of a risk adjustment question, isn't it?
Well, it leads to erroneous risk adjustments. That's exactly right.
And I assume that we, when we do the evaluation of the what the developers propose, we may decide that their definition of what is being measured is not sufficiently precise to measure what they say they're measuring. So that's going to be a very important evaluation factor for us.
But I agree that it belongs in scientific acceptability, that question.
Yeah, I couldn't really work out where to put it in 2F for or scientific, but it's my concern is that a lot of these issues, I'm not sure that we're going to really be able to identify measures that don't address these things until testing is done down the road. I don't know that there's anything we can do about that, but
well, except we're going to ask them what testing have they done.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so I think there's this thing under scientific acceptability, identification of meaningful differences in performance and risk adjustment strategy. So it belongs somewhere in one of those. You know,
yeah.
What have you done to make sure that this is...
There's appropriate granularity in the denominator.
Well, the differences that you find actually reflect...
differences in resource use rather than different patient populations.
Right, right.
Well, we've got this issue, basic framework for clustering or assigning codes. Maybe 2A needs to be split. There's a basic framework for clustering and identifying, and then the assigning codes may have intended to be part of this. So we've got grouping or assigning algorithms D, and perhaps it gets moved. Well, that's C. I'd move C down below the grouping or assigning algorithms. But even more important, I think I'd split the patient population out of C as a separate issue. Because I really think this issue of which patient population, this whole issue of stratification, is part of the risk adjustment comparison analysis. And I'd like to see it kept distinct enough that it's easy to pull out and think about separately.
I think that would address my concern too, Jim.
So C could have two sub components, and one being all other resource use measures besides episode-based measures? And one thing I heard the steering committee entertain was in the submission form, and so we would include this in here, making sure the measure developer tells us which type of resource use measure it is. And so we would give them our categories that we've selected and then leave room for an other, potentially.
Yeah, one of the other things I want to know about the measure, and I don't think it—I think it goes into two, where we're talking about the underlying logic, is what subcategories of resource use the measure reports.
And what do you mean by subcategory?
Well, things like inpatient, nursing home, ambulatory, pharmacy. Some, you know, is the measure just a lumpy measure where we give you the aggregates? Is the measure one the way we've constructed it, where we also give you subcategories? We having aggregated by episode or by patient, we're now going to disaggregate again within that to be able to say where the resources are being provided.
So there's a series of checkboxes there for different healthcare categories of healthcare cost or utilization. And I could one of the categories be, you know, utilization identified as inappropriate or sort of in
yeah,
a different...
I mean, the data protocol says, what are you going to be aggregating up, right? What data have you captured, or are you trying to capture in defining what resources you're trying to measure? And then as part of the reporting part of it is the question of, you know, once you've aggregated up this stuff, do you de-aggregate it in your reporting of the measure? And how do you de-aggregate?
So you're thinking about subtotals, if you will, of costs.
Yes, exactly, subtotals. Thank you.
And my thing is sort of in a different dimension, so maybe it's a different question, which is, are you going to identify inappropriate utilization? Because, you know, that matters a lot. Somebody may just find it's higher or lower, and that's interesting, and we don't know which cost is the right one. Maybe the low-cost provider is using too few resources. So there is perhaps this whole separate question about, does the measure look at inappropriate or identify inappropriate cost or utilization? Because on the unlikely event we get one of those, then it's going to address the quality issue simultaneously.
I just want to throw out two potential buckets getting up at this comment, and then let all of you respond to if it would meet that. So you could have another checkbox to say, is this getting at inappropriate use, or is it getting into a resource use that relies on some kind of relative benchmark? So is it relative resource use, where there's not necessarily a right answer, but you're more interested in variation?
I think that's a great suggestion.
Okay, any other comments for number two besides what we've heard, and certainly, again, addressing in the future how cryptic it is? Anything missing or other A through G that need to be split out? Okay. So moving on to three, which is the episode construction logic. And what this gets at is, okay, so you've identified your clinical area, to keep it simple. So let's say it's diabetes. You've given us the codes that would tell us who you want in your population. You've identified which comorbids and disease interactions would be of interest. You gave us those codes. You have provided instructions on any hierarchies using the codes and the groupings that you've already specified, all with the needed granularity. And then in subsystem three, what is being requested is, okay, now that all these data typically based on diagnosis and procedure codes have been identified, what's the start and end date of the episode or of the measure itself? Is it a calendar year? How do you take care of redundancies, not double counting, or let's say two procedures on the same day? One is from the assistant physician, one is the physician explaining to the user what to do with those, etc. So
the word start, you've got end here, but start doesn't, I don't believe, appear. And I think what you said was clearer than what's written down here.
Okay.
But I think that would be a good thing, is how do you define the start and end? You know, if this is an episode measure, how do you define the length of the episode? What triggers start? What triggers the end?
Okay.
So I'm not sure how 3A differs from what was in 2.
So they're completely dependent on each other in order to construct a valid a real measure. What the distinction is, the first is really getting into how you identify, and this would be where the TAPS, for example, would be of particular use. So let's say it's a cardio area. They would make sure that the measure developer has appropriately identified the diagnoses for which they're saying they want to evaluate, procedures that they say are meaningful for this particular diagnosis, you know, need to show. So it has to have some clinical sense, as, you know, is another way to put it. And then what three does, it gets into the details of, now that you have all these clinical diagnoses, and at this point with no real time bands on it, what are the start and end points? How do you deal with, you know, claims for the same service coming from different professionals, potential, all those kinds of, it's really putting the details of the claims into that clinical logic and actually constructing an episode or your unit of measure. And they may not necessarily, one may go before the other at times, especially for population-based measures where you might ahead of time just build your temporal logic and then run your clinical logic. So it's not necessarily implying that one has to happen before the other, but it's just, at least for CMS, they broke it out this way, and dealing with the developers for physician measures, ETGs, they often talk about clinical logic and episode construction separately as well. And typically, a little bit different than the clinical logic, though, certainly whether or not the diagnosis codes are really representing what they're supposed to is a different story. But that's relied on, you know, clinical judgment, guidelines, et cetera, where relevant. The episode construction is often informed empirically as well. So when does it make sense to end an episode of knee surgery? Is it 30 days out? Is it 60 days out? And often the vendors have done empirical analysis to see when those type of measures, claims related to that particular event tend to die off, for example. Or they're empirically test, you know, how to manage an assistant physician's claim.
So are we asking them by this that is it, are you, you know, what is the day length? Are we asking them if it's 30 days? Or we ask them, why did they choose 30 days?
So we will ask them at this point 30 days, and then as part of scientifically acceptability, we may request what's the validity of choosing that 30 days based on
right.
what it is they say they're trying to measure.
Well, this is a how.
This is the how, and then it informs the, okay, now you've said you made this a 30-day, tell us why you think that's valid. And that comes into the scientific acceptability section of the submission. They're all very intertwined, and so I apologize for how difficult it is to disentangle. So that said, is there anything that seems to be missing from this section three? Perhaps, you know, once we flesh out the criteria further, it may become clearer, but at least as a starting point.
So what is the, what are linking complementary services? I'm not quite sure what that means.
So for example, claims, bringing in the claims together that you would want to include in your episode construction that aren't defined in the clinical logic. And I had an example. Let me see if I can dig it up. But clearly we would have to provide examples. I can't find it right now.
But is this about which claims to include?
Yes.
So, but that's sort of part of the data protocol. I mean, that's, but in a certain sense, the data cleaning and all that, inclusion exclusion criteria, aren't they the first part of this construction logic?
not the way we're trying to define it here. They all are part of, in the end, constructing the measure, the clinical logic, et cetera. This episode construction logic, as it was laid out, is really about the start end dates, what are the trigger dates, how do you deal with redundancy and overlap, what other services need to be brought in, what are complementary, so you don't want to count twice, for example, potentially, and then the units of the resource services themselves. So now that you've identified your clinical logic, et cetera, are you holding that unit accountable for inpatient stay, emergency department, pharmacy services, and all of that would, the steering committee would be able to evaluate whether or not that makes sense by thinking about what the measure is measuring. So it's if it's an ambulatory care measure for PCPs on some condition that's typically managed on the ambulatory care, and they don't mention anything about counting inpatient stays, and yet they stick it in there, number three, we might wonder why. It wouldn't make sense necessarily. They would have to explain to us why they're including that.
There is a concept that Ingenix has in their grouper of something they call a phantom episode, and it's related to the fact that you have multiple claim lines on a claim, and you can have multiple diagnoses linked to those claim lines. And then you get this problem when those diagnoses are kind of disparate. They're for different underlying disease states. You know, how do you assign the dollars on that claim? And when they try to make the best clinical decision they can, but then they have these other diagnoses, and so they create what's called a phantom episode that kind of exists until they see another claim that they can link it back to. And I think that's one of the issues that vendors have to deal with under 3 when they talk about this. We don't want to be vendor-specific, but it's a kind of a concept of when you have multiple diagnoses that are incompatible, how do you split out the costs and the services that are linked to a specific diagnosis, and then what do you do with the other diagnoses?
Well, and that gets directly back to what's being measured, whether we're measuring the costs of treating patients with diabetes or measuring the resources associated with treating diabetes or treating patients with diabetes, with all the other things that they have, all the other issues that they have associated with their care. So a patient with diabetes who also has Parkinson's is a very, how do you deal with the Parkinson's? Is that a risk adjustment issue? Is that a try to split the costs out? Again, patients with diabetes versus diabetes as the focus of the resource use analysis.
In other words, what's the cost of the incremental cost attributable to the disease?
Well,
as opposed
look,
to
that's one way that they might be doing it, or they might be trying to risk adjust those other diseases into the analysis. Which
or
I
the hierarchy of saying that because Parkinson's is a more expensive disease to treat, they're a Parkinson's patient.
Right.
Diabetes.
And they get thrown out of the diabetes category and get thrown into some other category. And then we've got a Parkinson's patient with diabetes. Exactly. And I don't, people are going to do that differently, and I think we're going to have to see what they do and how they struggle with it, and then we're going to figure out what struggling with it makes sense.
Well, I think the redundancy and overlap, I'm not sure if that's quite articulates that problem. Or the hierarchy of, it's all in here, but it's in a very cryptic way.
Yeah,
and it may even go all the way back up in 2 rather than in 3. We just identified it as a problem of pulling the data together, but it's conceptually what data you're trying to pull together and what comparisons you're trying to make.
Okay. Anything further on 3?
Only the 3E captured my issues of implicitly capture my issues about subcategories and subtotals?
Yes.
Except that this is just the counts, utilization counts. Sorry, I missed this before.
Right.
And not the monetized part.
Right, and that's part of the issue. You know, again, let's see what they tell us they're trying to present.
And right now, we stuck costing methodology, which is where they would potentially monetize in 5, which may or may not be the right place for it. It's 5C.
So, 4, are you going on to 4? Well, so
yes.
I'm still not sure what 3D represents, but maybe that will
Yeah, I put a note to explain more and provide an example or rename it.
So on 4A, I mean, just a risk of wordsmithing, I think the it starts, you know, I don't know whether you say adjust denominator or resource use amounts. I think it's just how are the comorbid conditions and other factors considered in the, and I wouldn't be that specific.
I agree. I would take out that adjust denominator.
Or episode resource amounts, yeah. Counts are monetized, but just, you know.
I agree.
How does the analysis control for, or how does the measure control for, comorbid conditions and other factors? Then the rest of it's just fine.
Agree.
We've got a couple of other adjustments. Which may be here, I think, you've got costing methodology in the profiling, and I think costing methodology goes up. Again, I'm thinking about all the things that are done to make the measures comparable across different somethings, whatever the somethings are. And we've got risk adjustment, we've got stratification, we've got exclusion, and we've got whatever processes are used to do costing or standardized costing, and that to me is a whole bundle of related stuff even before we get to the attribution issue.
I think this is a huge issue. Is the costing methodology and the work group discussed this in some detail, and some of the things batted around were monetize it with Medicare fees or but I've seen these things be all over the place based on different assumptions on how they're monetized.
One comment I have organizationally, every one of 1, 2, 3, and 5 all have multiple points underneath them. 4 has only got one. So that would imply either we need to move it into another category or break it down some more.
Or I think Jack is suggesting 4, that risk adjustment is one of the subgroups of a new category 4, and I'm not sure what do those things all have in common, Jack?
Well, I think they're all related to adjustment for purposes of comparison or creating comparability.
Right.
I haven't got the elegant wordsmithing here yet, but.
So what belongs in that is you're saying the monetization or costing methodology,
I think stratification as well.
Stratification.
Exclusion.
And just in case some of you I actually would like the opinion on in the relevance of this for resource use measures, and we don't have to answer it now, but currently NQF's policy on risk adjustment versus stratification is measures should not be risk adjusted where disparities are known to exist. So, for example, race, gender, et cetera, where there's a concern of disparity in the care delivered. Rather, they recommend that the measures be stratified. So they don't want everything adjusted away for stratification is a very important component of the measure submission process.
And administrative claims data, oftentimes race is not included, isn't that correct?
That's a problem.
Right, and likewise with respect to the cost adjustment, there will be times when standardized costing or pricing will be very useful for increasing comparability, and other times it's going to mask differences. So if a clinical group has negotiated a higher rate because they've taken over things like diabetes education and other things that they did not want to create separate codes for billing on, so we simply pay us more on the codes we currently bill, we are going to want to see those higher resources reflected in the total resource measure to understand how much is actually being consumed in the delivery of care. So it's not automatic that we definitely want standardized pricing or standardized costing. There are other times when you do, and we're going to want to see how they handle that and the logic behind it.
That's an excellent point. And that goes back to the point I was making at the our work group meeting, that some codes, depending upon the employment status of a physician, varies by almost 50%. Same service, just it depends whether you're owned by a hospital or you're in private practice. So.
So for those of you who don't have access to the webinar right now, based on the conversation I've heard, what I've done with subsystem 4 is change it to adjustments for comparability, and then I have three sub components underneath of it: risk adjustment method, stratification, and costing methodology.
What about benchmarking? Does anyone else think that benchmarking might be an adjustment to make for comparability?
You know, for a lot of these, there's not going to be any benchmarking for resource use. That's the problem.
What about peer group?
Well, those are obviously kind of a linked thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're all linked.
And it's so the question is, if this is one of those ones that are comparative rather than absolute, then how are you going to make your comparison? And these all address that. How do you know whether this is different, or and probably not going to be able to say whether it's better? Well, so I don't know. Is this scientific? Well, no, I think it's not just the scientific issue. I think the scientific evaluation, I actually think, is, you know, what benchmarks have you created? You know, what peer grouping system have you created to?
Yeah, and you know, one could easily imagine, you know, I'm blanking on who was talking about what's being done in California, the issue of, you know, comparison at the medical group level versus the individual physician level. But there may be some aspects of benchmarking or that fall into the, you know, the broadest category and are separate from the attribution category, while other kinds of benchmarking are deeply entangled with the attribution questions. And some of the non-attribution kinds of benchmarking should be up here as well.
Do you have an example of a non-attribution type of benchmarking?
Well, you know, again, if we're dealing with per capita measures for a specific patient population without regard to, you know, which medical group or, sorry, which clinical group they're being treated in, then we're dealing with a measure which doesn't involve attribution. It's simply looking at this set of patients. Identify who those patients are in some distinct way, but that's different from saying Dr. X or nurse practitioner. practitioner, why is the primary care doc responsible for controlling all these resources? And comparing them to other clinicians that are primary care clinicians.
I think what we'll find, especially for subsystem 5, is that in particular, well, one, stemming because there is so much flexibility for users, and we know that vendors vary on how they manage this, that some of these will be part of clinical logic or will be part of 4, and sometimes they won't be. And I think that's going to be a challenge in how to manage that. Right now, the approach has been if there's a potential for it to be separate, to leave it separate in 5 and then perhaps leave it up to the measure developer to explain that our benchmarking is part of step 4 in the risk adjustment, blah, blah, blah. Frankly, because there's so much variation, I'm a little stumped. I know we're a little stumped on how to manage that in a kind of standard approach. Open to suggestions.
I just think there needs to be recognition that attribution, which implies comparison at a very low level, is only one of several comparison strategies, and there can be comparison of costs or benchmarking, comparison of resources or benchmarking of resources at different levels, some of which may be entangled with the attribution issue and some of which may not be.
Okay.
And I guess another comparison that was thought appropriate is this, knowing what are the regional norms as opposed to national norms.
Sally, Ashley, this is Jack. I'm just looking at the time, and I know
it's
on the agenda that you called for opening for public comment at about this point. And I really do need to be off the call promptly at the half hour.
Okay.
Thanks, Jack. I was actually just trying to find my end, so thank you.
Well, thank you. I think we have great feedback. We have our homework for the next meeting. A lot to work with. Thank you so much for your time. I'll go ahead and hand it back over to Ashley.
Okay. Operator Anthony, if you're there, we just want to open up the line for anyone on the participant line for the public who would like to make a comment.
Absolutely. All public lines are now open. If you have a comment, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Rita Munley Gallagher on behalf of the American Nurses Association. Only to reiterate my previous comments about the need for education for those groups that will be engaged in the evaluation of the measures that are submitted once your criteria are put into place. I think that's critical. Thank you.
Thank you, Rita. And just to a brief response to that, we will actually be having a few webinars along with the measure developer community and the experts that will be reviewing the measures to make sure everyone is familiar with how the measures will be evaluated. So,
It will be the same steering committee, but we'll certainly make sure we're bringing the TAP experts. Provide them plenty of opportunity to get informed.
Right. Anything else, Sally, that you have?
That's it. Any last questions or comments from the work group?
And so next week's call is a follow-up to this committee meeting, is that right?
Yes. So next week's call will be a review of any updates we make. At this point, we'll try and send it ahead of time so it's not the focus. And then as a follow-up, the next step is to start examining a new submission form and the evaluation criteria, in particular Section 2, scientific acceptability. So starting with what we've already done. And we'll send maybe some preliminary materials Monday to make sure everyone knows where we're starting from. And then as we do our homework on our side, try and get that out to you potentially by Thursday so that you can react to it, or Wednesday, whatever day before August 5th is, so you have a chance to look at it before we have the webinar.
But that's still the subcommittee, correct?
Yes, it's still this work group, correct.
And then I would just suggest, to the extent that it's the actually something that's going to look like the call for measures, or is it the call for measures, or I don't know, the form is actually the measure submission form. Is that right?
Yes.
So to the extent that it, you know, that we're actually trying to comment on what the final thing is, I think it's going to be more useful to both of us rather than some interim document like we were looking at today. I don't know if that's possible, but it's just a suggestion.
Okay. Suggestion noted. Thank you. We'll do our best. The formatting is a nightmare because it's actually a web-based application.
Well, no. Just use a Word document, but I mean just that. Obviously, it can be cut and paste into the web thing when we're all done, but I'm just suggesting that we shouldn't be trying to draft an interim document, but we ought to be drafting the language that's going to go into this submissions form.
Okay.
Because that's what you're trying to come up with, right?
No, that's right. It's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good
suggestion. Any other thoughts, suggestions?
Do you want us to get back to you on some suggestions on modifying the measure submission form to meet these needs too, Sally, between now and then?
Yeah, we're going to do our best to get something that will be appropriate for you to react to ahead of time. But in the interim, if you have any suggestions, feel free to shoot them off. But at this point, just making sure you understand where we are right now in the evaluation criteria, what we do for quality measures would be the best homework until we can send you our next set of homework deliverables, so to say.
Okay. Thanks, Sally.
Uh-huh.